live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
People, welcome to this Friday Fri-yay edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I hope everyone out there is doing quite well. It is a sunny day, a sunny Friday here in mid-Michigan. A little chilly, though. You know, we're not seeing temps in the 60s or the 70s. We're in the 40s right now. A bit chilly, but I always say it's always a good day anytime you get to see the sunshine in Michigan, folks, okay? So, crack a smile. The weekend is upon us. Happy Good Friday to everybody out there. Easter Sunday is also on the docket for this weekend. And I'm excited, man. This is a major, major weekend in the world of sports because we've got the Final Four taking place, ladies and gents. That's right. The Final Four in women's college basketball will take place tonight. And you've got South Carolina taking on Stanford. That game will tip off at 6 p.m. on ESPN. And then at 9:30 p.m., you've got Arizona taking on Connecticut. All right, UConn. That will be at 9:30 also on ESPN. So you've got the Final Four in the women tonight. And then, of course, the fellas will take the court tomorrow. And you've got Houston and Baylor at 5 o'clock, around 5 o'clock, like 5:15 on CBS. Both of these games on CBS. The late slate being UCLA and Gonzaga at around 8:30 p.m. So, exciting stuff, man. You know, and I kind of already just gave my prediction on the men's tournament yesterday because I've been saying really all year that it will be Gonzaga and Baylor. You know, it's been Gonzaga and Baylor and then everybody else. Then the rest of the college basketball world just kind of falls in place, all right? Or it doesn't really matter, to be honest, if you talk about the top two teams. I don't want to say it doesn't really matter, all right? Everybody has your team, and your team certainly matters, especially if you are among, you know, one of the 68 teams that, you know, can say that they went to the NCAA tournament, because there are a lot of squads out there. Despite the fact that there are a lot of teams who get in, 68, it's not easy. There are a lot of teams out there who sit on the couch or go to the NIT. I mean, you talk about how fragile that kind of success is. That's elite success to go to the NCAA tournament. You know, just ask, you know, programs like Kentucky and Duke this year, right? And Michigan State, for that matter, who barely squeaked in. So, it's going to be Gonzaga and Baylor for me winning tomorrow. Tonight in the women's tournament, though, some really intriguing matchups. I think, you know, Gino Auriemma, who had a, you know, speaking of Baylor, who had a scare against Baylor to get to this Final Four game. And a lot of people thought that Baylor should have had a better chance to win that game. You know, the foul that the referees kind of swallowed their whistle on the jump shot. That's just really tough. That's a really tough way to lose, especially when you had the opportunity to knock off one of the greatest college basketball programs in the sport's history. But I think it's going to be UConn and Stanford for me. I like South Carolina a lot. I like Arizona as well. But against UConn, I think just UConn has more talent, the more superior team. And Stanford, I think, just has a slight edge over USC. So those are my picks for this weekend's Final Four. But, hey, we'll see, right? We will certainly see. Later on this hour, after our first break, what I want to do is actually I want to roll in a bit of the spring football media availability of a certain assistant Michigan State football coach, that being Ron Burton, who is the defensive line coach under Mel Tucker. And Ron Burton, man, I mean, you talk about a dude who has such an impressive resume. I mean, you know, a 29-year coaching vet, played four seasons in the National Football League. He is in his ninth season on the defensive staff at Michigan State. He has coached in a bowl game 12 of the past 14 seasons, including six bowls with the Spartans. And that includes the 2014 Rose Bowl, the 2015 Cotton Bowl, the College Football Playoff semifinal against Alabama in 2015. The 2017 Holiday Bowl, the Red Box Bowl, the Pinstripe Bowl. I mean, just an amazing, amazing resume. And, you know, I always wonder, you know, when you look at Ron Burton's resume and, you know, you just kind of I'm in awe when I look at that thing. And I just wonder to myself, okay, the fact that this dude is not a head coach somewhere, I think is a crime. And look, you know, Ron Burton, and it comes back to this whole conversation that we have within the game of football when it comes to the lack of black head coaches in football, period. Not just the NFL, but just period, across the board, folks. Mel Tucker to be, and that's why I was really excited. You know, as a reporter, you're supposed to be, you know, non-biased and all of that jazz. And I think in the world of sports talk radio, you're given some flexibility with that because, look, I always say, man, and it's something I had to learn when I first got the job here at WKAR, is that in the sports talk radio business, you know, opinion drives everything. And the non-bias kind of goes out the window when you host a sports talk radio show. Opinion drives everything. So for me, I've been given that flexibility as in comparison to being a reporter when I was at Channel 6 as an anchor and reporter there. You know, you got to completely remove yourself from the story, right? And you play to the local audience a little bit, but you can't just, you know, go spewing your opinion on the 6 and 11 o'clock news. All right. That's just not how that thing works. So that was something I had to get comfortable with when I took over for the great Earl Robinson. And, you know, with that being said, when I heard that Mel Tucker, a black head coach coming from Colorado, would be given a chance like this at Michigan State University, and to be honest, I mean, Mel Tucker, he doesn't have a long resume like that of Ron Burton. You know, this is only his second head coaching stint, having just spent 1 year at Colorado. So the fact that Michigan State University was able to snag Mel Tucker and give him this opportunity as a black head coach with not a lot of college head coaching experience, that is not normal, folks. Not normal at all. Because, and who knows, I don't know, maybe Ron Burton just likes it here in East Lansing, and maybe he has been offered some gigs that just, you know, he wasn't feeling, you know, that were maybe head coaching gigs. I don't know. But, you know, when I look at the Burton file, you know, that file is very, very, very impressive. And you just think to yourself, man, why isn't Ryan a head coach somewhere? With that being said, I mean, you know, Mel Tucker, there's a reason why he decided to keep, you know, Ron Burton around when the change of regime happened. You know, between, you know, Mark D'Antonio to Mel Tucker. So you get to hear from Ron Burton on how, you know, this Michigan State spring football practice is coming along. You know, there are, goodness. And, you know, I hate to sit here and start making these hard assumptions and these hard takes on Michigan State football during the spring, because we do it, especially after we see the spring game. And let's be real, like 90% of what we see during the spring game totally changes once the season begins. We start to bring up new conversations and new problems, or maybe a hidden gem that we did not see during the spring game. So it's totally nonsensical for me, and that's why I always, 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 when talking about Michigan State spring football, I caution all of our listeners out there to take whatever you see during the spring game, to take whatever you hear during these press conferences and media availabilities and interviews that you're hearing and reading, take it with a truckload of salt, because we still are a long way from the start of Michigan State football, folks. Okay? Just approach with caution is what I always say. But you'll get a chance to hear from Ron Burton later on this hour. Definitely want to bring that to you guys, because I've been getting some messages from you guys about spring football and so on and so forth. Okay. Okay. I want to talk a little bit about the NBA real quick. You know, I don't get to talk a lot of NBA here on Current Sports, because simply the Detroit Pistons, the local team here in Michigan, are just, they're bad. They're horrible. Not just bad. They're horrible. They really stink. And I hate to say that, but, you know, I always keep it real as a Detroit sports fan. And you guys know, those who have been listening to the show for a long time, you guys know that I am a die-hard Detroit Pistons fan. Look, as I record this show here in my dining room, I'm looking to my left right now, and in my living room just above my television, I have a Detroit Bad Boys logo flag banner hanging up. Right in my living room, right in the middle of my living room, basically, right above my television, is a Detroit Bad Boys. You remember the Bad Boys logo from the 80s, you know, the Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, Rick Mahorn, Bill Laimbeer, Vinnie Johnson days. That logo with the skull and crossbones in front of a orange basketball with Detroit at the top and Bad Boys in cursive at the bottom. That's what's hanging above my TV. And I have, you know, when the Pistons won the championship back in 04, that's when I really, really fell in love with the Pistons. You know, the going to work Pistons, if you will, with Chauncey Billups and Tayshaun Prince, Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace, Rasheed Wallace. Oh man, that was a heck of a team, right? And that was a team that was first led by the great Rick Carlisle, now longtime head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, and then Larry Brown took over and led them to the championship in 04. But that's when I really fell in love with the team. And I remember, you know, I was like 14 at the time. I was 13. I turned 14 that year, in October. I was 13 watching that. And I remember like real tears streaming down my face as I watched, the Pistons celebrate after eliminating Kobe Bryant, the late great Kobe Bean Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal, Gary Payton, Karl Malone, beating them in five games. Real tears streamed down my face, and I remember calling up my late great grandfather and, you know, screaming on the phone, "Grandpa, we did it!" You know, that's how deep my fandom runs for my Detroit Pistons. But, you know, and they had opportunities. You know, that team wasn't totally dismantled in the years that followed. You know, they knocked on the door and kept going to Eastern Conference Finals appearances for at least like two more years, I think. And, you know, never quite got over that hump. But it just hasn't been the same since. And a lot of the reason why it hasn't been the same since is when you just look at and evaluate the landscape that is the NBA today. If you don't have at least two superstars, then you're automatically out of the conversation for competing for an NBA championship now. It started with LeBron James, and you can debate this with me all day, but I always say it starts with LeBron James, because, you know, you can bring up Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen when they all linked up with the Boston Celtics, right? And then people even will bring up, you know, "Oh, look at Jordan, look at your GOAT. Michael Jordan had Dennis Rodman and Scottie Pippen." And first off, you know, Dennis Rodman got added to the equation on the back nine of those six championship rings. But you know, the big point there is that it wasn't a link up with you league. You know, Jordan, you know, wasn't calling up the best in the game like, hey, you want to play with me? No. You saw The Last Dance. Jordan was trying to kill those dudes on the regular in the NBA. Okay, so don't give me that jazz. When LeBron James made a spectacle out of it and had an hour-long special entitled The Decision, where we literally had to wait like 58 minutes of that hour-long special, you know, as he talked about his career and, you know, blah, 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 and just really just pumped it all up. And then we found out that he was going to be taking his talents from Cleveland to Miami to link up with two of the best players in the league. And that's the thing. When you discuss this, never before had we seen a dude who was arguably the best basketball player in the world, probably the best basketball player in the world at that moment, linking up with two other players who are in their primes and are ranked as two of the top 10 NBA players in the league. Never before have we seen that kind of talent link up when you consider careers and where they were in their careers, where they were ranked in comparison to the rest of the NBA. We had never before seen a move like that. Then they had the whole concert, and they came out and said, we're not going to win one or two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I mean, it's just it's ridiculous. But it opened the eyes of other stars out there that it really said to them, because LeBron James, you know, is the leader, is one of the leaders, if not the leader, when it comes to being the face and the voice of the NBA. A lot of players said, look, man, if LeBron James is going to do this, then why not me? You know, if LeBron is going to go out there and link up with other stars to try and win a ring, then look, why not me? I mean, this is the best player in the world doing this. That gives me the green light. He made it normal to do it on that kind of a stage. I mean, come on, man. And that started this whole, this ridiculous thing that is NBA free agency now, where we see stars linking up with stars just to win a ring. And it's troubling, man. It's hard to watch. You know, I'm a big NBA fan. Don't get me wrong, man. I am a major, major NBA fan. But, you know, at the same time, it is tough to watch like 70% of the league, because, you know, unless you're just like a diehard basketball fan, and I am, you know, I sat on my couch last night. What was that? Two nights ago. You know, I've got NBA League Pass, and I sat on my couch last night, and I was watching, like, you know, these middle tier to the bottom of the league type teams just, you know, just go at it. I think I was watching, oh man, what was I watching? I was watching Kings and Spurs the other night. It's the Kings and the Spurs, two teams that absolutely have no shot at all at winning a ring this season. Okay, you know, watching like, you know, De'Aaron Fox, you know, drive to the lane, and you know they were down by like, you know, the Kings were down by like 21 points. That's just me though. I'm a basketball junkie like that, you know. Especially as I'm working at night, I'm always doing a lot of work at night. For those that don't know, I'm also an actor. So, you know, while I was watching the Spurs and Kings, I'm like going over lines and stuff, and you know, I just have it on, man. It's like the perfect background music for me. But, you know, a lot of these teams have no shot. I always say in the NBA, if you don't at least have two stars, two superstars, not just stars, two superstars, because, look, the Pistons had stars. You know, you had Blake Griffin, right? I think Jeremy Grant is a star, you know? But you need superstars to compete, at least two, to compete or try to compete. I should say try. That's just to try to compete for an NBA championship. Because it has become entirely too top-heavy now. And I really do think, I think it's gotten so ridiculous now to the point where Adam Silver and the upper execs have to do something about it. They've got to make some changes now. They've got to limit how insane in the membrane this can get. Because it just doesn't make it fun as a fan to watch this. And look, I'm not... I don't know if I'm in the majority in thinking this, but I certainly am not in the minority. I may be right in that middle crowd because I put this out on my Facebook page. I've tweeted it. And there have been people who have reached out to me who have said, you know, who have commented on my statuses and said that, yeah, I agree, Al. It's tough to watch. It's tough to watch. It's not as fun as it was back in the day. You know, and these dudes, and I think it's partly our fault as fans, because when discussing legacies, when discussing, you know, who the greatest basketball players of all time are, we immediately bring up rings number one. And it's, don't get me wrong, it's a huge, huge factor, right? I mean, Mike has six of them while being just about perfect in every other area of his basketball resume. You know, but the ring is what we always bring up first in the discussion. So if you don't even have one ring, how are you in the discussion? And that's what we've done as a society, as a basketball, you know, fandom community, is we've placed rings at the forefront of the conversation. So these superstars, they say, man, I want to be, you know, you look at their legacies and evaluate their legacies. I think the perfect example of this is Kevin Durant, for sure, because he's so, so sensitive. I'm not even going to go on the rant that I want to go on when it comes to the interaction between him and actor Michael Rapaport. That's another conversation for another day. But KD is a perfect example of this. He is like the extreme example of this, but he's the perfect example because it's so easy to bring up because a lot of people know what I'm talking about. He's so sensitive to the point where even he made up like burner Twitter accounts. He's so sensitive about his legacy, and a lot of guys are. And he knows, and he knew that if he didn't get a ring, then that he wouldn't be in the same breath as some of the greatest to ever do it. So what did he do? He made a move just like LeBron James, right? To link up with a team that beat you, and you had a chance to beat them. You were up 3-1 against the Warriors the year prior to. When you had, you know, the Robin to your Batman and Russell Westbrook, the team that eliminated you the year prior to, a team that we were talking about that possibly was going to be better than Michael Jordan's 72 win Bulls back in the 90s. You decided to link up with that team that did not need you just so that you could win a ring. That's a perfect example of the monster that LeBron James has created. And it's become way too top heavy. And speaking of KD, now what are we seeing now? Kevin Durant is out there in Brooklyn with some of the best players in the game. He's done it again. KD has taken the LeBron blueprint, and LeBron has hopped around too. You know, LeBron went back to Cleveland, played with the great Kyrie Irving, top 10 player, right? Kevin Love was also on that team, top 15 player at best, right? Or at the very least, excuse me, and other pieces on that squad. And then he came back. Then he went from Cleveland and decided to head to L.A., where he linked up with a top 10 player in Anthony Davis, and they just won the championship, right? So other teams are seeing this and saying, yeah, we got to link up. And we've seen this. I mean, we saw, you know, Russell Westbrook link up with James Harden to try and win a ring. That didn't work out, though. Their games really clashed. You know, Chris Paul out there in Phoenix with Devin Booker. You see this trend. There's so many teams that I can bring up that have at least this duo, this superstar duo that gives them a good shot at winning it all, right? You know, out in Denver, and this just kind of naturally happened, but you've got, you know, Nikola Jokic, Joker, with Jamal Murray and some other great pieces out there in Denver. You got to at least have two. But, you know, looking at it now, you're looking at Brooklyn and L.A. specifically. And I know that L.A. is dealing with a lot of injuries right now. You know, LeBron James is out, AD is out, and, you know, I think they're going to rest up until playoff time happens, I think. But they just added Andre Drummond, former Detroit Pistons big man, Andre Drummond, who actually in his debut, he actually got hurt, but still. The Lakers made that move because they are feeling clear pressure based on what the Brooklyn Nets are doing. You think I'm joking here? No, Jeannie Buss actually just straight up came out and said, "Bring it on." No, I'm not joking. "Bring it on" was her exact quote. Quote, "Bring it on." When discussing what the Brooklyn Nets are doing and have done, compiling players Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden. They also took another Piston of ours, Blake Griffin. So you got two Pistons, Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, two former Pistons now playing for both of these teams. You know, my goodness. You know, you want to win a ring? Just go to somewhere else. Go to a super team in the NBA, not the Detroit Pistons, right? But, you know, Blake Griffin's over there, and there's rumors about LaMarcus Aldridge also donning a Nets jersey. And I even saw ridiculous rumors out there floating about Vince Carter coming out of retirement and suiting up for Brooklyn. I mean, it's ridiculous what Brooklyn has done. And Jeannie Buss, again, she was asked directly. You know, she was on Stephen A's World. You know Stephen A. Smith? I mean, everybody knows Stephen A. Smith, right? Stephen A's World, which is Stephen A's, he's got his own television show now on ESPN Plus. And she was asked about what the Brooklyn Nets are doing. And, you know, Jeannie Buss is the Lakers CEO and president. And she said, quote, "Bring it on. You know, we see what they're doing. Bring it on." Quote, "It brings out the best in us. So bring it on." Yeah. And it's like, you know, if you're the Sacramento Kings and you're watching this, it's like, how can you compete? And Adrian Wojnarowski, you know, Woj bombs, you know, Woj is like the most deeply connected reporter in the NBA. He had a great article that kind of just broke down just how many coaches are just ticked off about this. NBA coaches have filed complaints to Adam Silver about the makeup of the league and have been having discussions about Adam Silver, you know, with Adam Silver about how top heavy the league has become. And Woj lays this all out in his piece. Now, I do believe you have to have an ESPN subscription to read this piece, but Woj talks about how coaches are not happy with this. And can you blame them? I mean, can you blame them? You know, if you're the coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves or, you know, Sacramento Kings, and you're watching all of this, it's like, you know, how do you keep your job? I mean, you're gonna have a lot of losses. How do you keep your job? How do you realistically compete? You know, I don't get it, man. You know, you're the Cleveland Cavaliers coach out there. You know, LeBron left you and, you know, left you with nothing, right? I mean, how? And as a fan, I want to ask this to the basketball fans out there, to the NBA fans out there. You know, you have to be an NBA fan because I'm sure that a lot of people have like steered away from the NBA for this, because of this. Do you like this as a fan? I'm just curious. I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing, you know, I'm talking to the wrong people. I've been talking to the majority here. Do you enjoy seeing superstars link up with other superstars, putting together basically, you know, an Eastern Conference All-Star team with Brooklyn and a Western Conference All-Star team with the Lakers? And we all know it's going to probably just come down to those two teams as the season goes on. You could probably sprinkle in a few other All-Star teams in there, like Denver. Utah is another one I think about. But do you like seeing that? Because I don't. I'm old school. I like seeing the best compete against the best. I don't like seeing Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, LaMarcus Aldridge, Blake Griffin all on the same team. I don't know, man. It just annoys me. It annoys me. It just does. But that's the league that has become a craziness, just insane makeup that we're watching on the daily in the association now, and it just turns me off, man. It's almost like for me, You know, I'm going to watch these games because, again, I like ball. But I can almost see for a lot of NBA fans out there, they're just saying, you know, call me when the playoffs hit. Hit me up when the playoffs hit, and I'll just be, you know, rooting for some kind of change. Because right now, it doesn't look like the league is going to change anytime soon. I don't know. Maybe Adam feels a lot of pressure from these other coaches and make some changes. But I don't know, man. I'm going to be rooting for a lot of underdogs come this playoff year in the NBA because I want to see somebody just totally dismantle what we are seeing on the regular in the association. But what say you? 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can leave us a comment anywhere there on our Facebook page, and you can also tweet us. You can tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or you can tweet the show at WKAR News. So, what I want to do right now is actually hit our first break. And when we come back, as promised, I want you to all hear from Ron Burton, who is an assistant coach under Mel Tucker. Ron Burton has had quite the career here at Michigan State. And an amazing, amazing football mind. And, you know, and hearing Mel Tucker, what he had to say about, you know, Ron Burton is pretty awesome. And he just rains his praises. And you'll get an update from Ron Burton's perspective on just exactly where this Michigan State team is throughout spring practice. You know, and Ron has a good finger on the pulse, folks. I mean, he is an intense defensive line coach, all right? His ninth season here at Michigan State. So you'll hear from Coach Burton in just a moment. You are listening to the Friday Fri-Yay edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and right now I want to roll in this week's media availability from Michigan State spring practice. That's right, Michigan State is getting ready for the spring game, right? And just trying to get better day by day. The spring game is set. If you don't already have it marked on your calendars, the spring game has been set for the 24th. All right, so if you haven't already marked that down, mark it down right now. That's going to be a Saturday, April 24th, the end of this month. And here is what Ron Burton had to say. Ron Burton in his ninth season as a Michigan State assistant football coach, coming from the Mark D'Antonio regime now to the leadership of Mel Tucker, defensive line coach for Michigan State football, Ron Burton.
We'll take questions for about 15 minutes for Coach before he has to join his next staff meeting. We'll start with Matt Wenzel from M Live. Matt.
Hey, Ron, you go back a year ago, you had to replace three or four starters up front, and it's kind of the opposite situation this year where everybody's back except for Naquan, and you've got Drew coming in. I guess how different is the outlook for that front four now than it was a year ago?
Well, the outlook is to be the best defensive line we can be, to be the best in the country, best in the Big Ten. And we have a group of guys that have some veteran experience up front. And yes, it starts with the two defensive ends and Drew Beasley, Jacob Honeshoot. We also got Jack Camper out there. Those guys are understand what we're asking. And we've brought in Drew Jordan, who is a strong position of defensive end, being able to play both sides and understanding what we ask him to do. And then inside, hey, we got three guys that played a lot, really four, Jacob Slade, Mr. Mallory, and we expect a lot of Jalen Hunt. And then we'll have another young man, Maverick Hansen, that has played some as of last year. But we expect a lot from this group, and we see how it goes. And we're in knee-deep in the spring ball right now, day four.
And with Jacob being a guy who contributed immediately as a freshman and, you know, 3 year starter, I mean, when you bring a guy like that back for a fifth year, I mean, what's the expectation from him with all the snaps he's played?
Well, the expectations is for him to be a leader. The expectations, to understand the process and being able to help other guys around him, then that the experience should be shared and by example and by being able to coach those guys up. That's what we expect. And we expect them to be there to have some things that at the end of the year, that means that he had a great year, that the ability to play consistently up front would allow him to have some things that comes at the end of winning championships. So we shall see.
Thanks, Ron.
Our next question is from Lindsey Huddleston.
Hey, Coach, good to see you again. It's spring again. We're 4 days in. You got some veterans, no doubt, but are there some principles that you always have to go back to around this time of year so the players don't get too far ahead of themselves? Everyone's excited to get back. We've had this COVID issue, but are there some kind of mainstay principles you got to always go back to that you've learned that have helped you with these guys for the latter part of the season?
Yes, the fundamentals, the ability to play with pad level, the use of your hands, guys understanding what's going on pre-snap. All those things, pre-snap reads, knowing where the back is, know what type of offensive line you're seeing in front of you, learning what's going on with the strengths and weaknesses of the teams you play against, the individual you play against. So you go back to the principles of the fundamentals, the footwork, the hands, the movement. And those things are more important than playing with power consistently.
Right. And just as a quick follow-up, you know, the social media age, I just got to ask, from when you started in this role to now, have you seen any kind of influence that social media has played, good, bad, or indifferent, with you coaching up these guys?
Well, it's always reinforcement, more importantly, with the social media. And it still goes back to the simple ways of playing the game. And, you know, the complex stuff stays out. It's the ABCs of the things that I see on social media that's really helps reaffirm on what we're doing. We've got a lot of great coaches out there, and you keep it simple up front and understand what's important. And the most important things is being able to play with your hands, use your feet, and play with pad level, and being aggressive in what you're doing and being repetitive with that in a stressful situation. That's what we need to see. And social media can play a good part and a bad part in that. So, but we try to get back down to the groundwork and work from there. The film does not lie.
I appreciate that, Coach. Thank you.
Our next question is from Nick Mannis with WLNS.
Coach, good to see you again. As you were mentioning, you're knee deep in spring ball, and as you said that, there was a level of excitement that it seems you're feeling when it comes to that. As we're getting towards doing things that seem a little bit with some normalcy, what's it been like the first couple of days, and what are you most excited about this group?
Well, number one, what I'm excited about the group is the fact that they're a veteran group. We got some young guys in behind them, but we have the ability to have more people to help coach the group up. And that's what's exciting from the defensive end position with three seniors, four seniors up front, to the defensive tackles inside. We have other people other than myself with great examples who have been through the wars and what Coach Tucker wants, you know, being able to play with pad level, being able to motivate. Okay, being able to understand that it has to be done on a daily basis, on an every play basis, and being consistent with it. And that's what we like about this group and being in the veteran group.
And a quick little follow-up, as you were saying, not just you, but other guys being, you know, examples. Is it knowing that we're not able to be there with you guys during practices, or are you getting in there as usual and putting your hands on the guys and having some fun with that during practices?
There's no doubt about that. Always want to play with power and how you use your hands. It takes hands to make where you want to happen up front and the ability to use your feet. But yes, We try to be as, you know, aggressive and being able to be an example up front. And Coach Burke is still doing that. That's for sure.
Thank you, Joe.
Our next question is from Stephen Brooks.
Hey, Ron. Hope you're doing well. Wanted to ask you about Brandon Wright, a new guy with your group. Just where did the idea to move him to D-line come from? How did he sort of embrace that, I guess? And just how's he been doing in these first couple of days?
Well, Brandon Wright is a former tailback. His ability to run, his ability to pass rush and lead on third down, it creates an opportunity because we don't have enough young guys in behind that has his ability and his upside, the use of his feet. And just like a running back, being able to use proper footwork to get to the quarterback, we think he has a lot of upside in that, and he's embraced that this spring, and he's taken it one day at a time, but he's definitely flashed already in the pass rushing situations, and we're glad we have him on our side of the ball.
And if I could ask a second question, I wanted to ask you about Drew Jordan as well. Normally, you know, when you have new faces, of course they're younger guys for the most part. When you get a guy new to the group that has his experience level, what has he brought and just what's it been like working with him?
Well, different ways of teaching. Number one, with the experience in being, have been a starter coming here. It's a plus for us. He's a student of the game, has great pass rush ability, and also plays with great power. And just being a great example to the young guys up front and what he's done and how he's been coached at other places. And that helps improve and reaffirm what we're teaching here, too. So he has been a pleasure on and off the field. And I think it's just like having another coach on the field also.
Got it. Thank you very much.
Our next question is from Paul with Spartan Magazine.
Hey, Ron, thanks for doing this for us. I wanted to ask you about a couple guys. Maverick Hansen looked like he gained some good weight in the offseason, and Deshaun Mallory looks like he's got his body maybe cut up a little bit better. Could you talk about maybe those guys and the offseason conditioning they had and how that might help you out this year?
Well, start with Maverick. He's down in some weight right now. He's about 305, 300 pounds, and we thought that was necessary for him to be able to move. He plays with good pad level and strength. He plays with great power, so that's what we love about him. We have a kid, Deshaun Mallory, who's lost some weight and really put him in, making him a little bit more dynamic. He's lost 25, 30 pounds, and it's allowed him to have a lot more movement in Deshaun Mallory. And some guys have put on some weight, creating some strength, and our upperclassmen, like a Jacob Slade, he's at right at 315, and he's playing with great power and push, and he's just managing it to be able to run with it at all times. And then Jalen Hunt, he's about 315, and he's doing the same thing, trying to sculpture and reduce the fat and have more muscle. And our strength and conditioning has allowed that to happen, and really our nutritionist has allowed to see the fruits of that labor already with those guys being able to play with great strength and pad level. But they're reducing their body fat through this system, and it's been great.
And then as a quick follow-up, if I could, you had a big group of redshirt freshmen this year from last year. Have you seen any flashes from anybody? Can you talk about some of the progress maybe some of those young guys have made?
Well, we got guys that are trying to flash right now. One of the big ones is Simeon Barrow and the pass rush part of it. He's very aggressive. He gets off on the ball. He just has a tendency to understand that he has to play his gap, but pass rush wise, he has flashed in that. And two young guys, Kyle King and Chris Mayfield, two guys that are on the rise, but they're still learning the system and going from there. So they're still work in progress.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate it.
Our next question, we'll go back to Matt with M Live.
Hey, Ron, you mentioned a couple of guys pass rush wise. I was wondering, you know, with losing the guys you lost before last season, the sacks went down. Mello talked about it the other day. He talked about, you know, needing to bring pressure with the four guys. I was wondering when you get, if you have like the season you had and you can get a full spring, how much do you think increasing pass rush would be somewhat being able to install what you wanted to install? Or is it more just developing, you know, personal, you know, the guys, the personnel you have, the roster?
Number one, being able to install what we want to install, but still go back to the basics of, you know, being able to play fundamental pass rush, being able to use your hands consistently, developing your first and your second move, and having a spring is allowing us to do that. And we have guys that have a great first move, but they're working on their second move right now. Jacob Planischuk, who uses his hands tremendously well. Drew Beasley, who plays with great power inside and out. They're developing that second move now that's going to allow us to gain in more sacks and the ability to carry it over by having a spring ball and then having a summer prior to going into the fall. So no doubt about that. We expect that to improve, and it starts with the great fundamentals in our pass rush ability.
You mentioned Jalen Hunt. He missed the last, I can't remember how many games last year with what appeared to be an injury. Has he been ready to go, full go and practice
yes.
and all that
he
stuff?
He has not missed a rep. He's going. Very dynamic in his pass rush also. And I apologize for not mentioning his name, Jalen Hunt. But consistency is what he needs to be. He flashes all the time. And I tell you what, he has a great get off. And we want to utilize that as much as possible, being disruptive. So keep understanding that the use of his hands as well as his feet will allow him to be more productive in pass rush and in the run game.
All right, again, that was Ron Burton, assistant coach for the Michigan State football team. He is actually the defensive line coach. And yeah, that's around on a variety of different topics there. Really, Joe, centering on the progression of this Michigan State football squad moving forward throughout spring. All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, I'll put a bow on this week's current sports with Reflection Friday. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back, ladies and gents, to WKAR's Current Sports. It is Friday, and we are just about out of time. And you guys know I close out each and every Friday edition of Current Sports with Reflection Friday, where I look at the week that has been here on the show, the topics we've discussed, the interviews and press conferences that we've rolled in, and bring to you my final thoughts on the week that has been here on our airwaves, and maybe bring up a story or two that we haven't gotten the chance to tackle here on the show. But for me, just really the highlight of the week for me has been discussing all of the March Madness action. I really, really soaked it up, man, because I didn't realize how much I missed it until I sat on my couch and just watched every single game that I could. And, watching everything that's happened up until this point, we have the Final Four. It's bittersweet, man. Enjoy these final two games leading up to the national championship game, because it's been a fun ride. We've got a double-digit seed in the Final Four in UCLA. Of course, we talked a lot about the Michigan basketball program and the job that Juwan Howard is doing and how it really was a choke job against the UCLA Bruins, because Michigan should have won that game. They had multiple opportunities to win that game and a golden chance to possibly go to a Final Four. The road was just like paved and ready to be driven on by a maize and blue vehicle, and that just didn't happen, all right? They got derailed by the Bruins, who are a tough, tough team, but they will fall against Gonzaga. But it's been fun, man, talking a lot of college basketball with you guys and you guys tuning in and chiming in. I think, again, Gonzaga and Baylor win tomorrow. And don't forget, again, tonight, the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. I'm going with Stanford over South Carolina, and I'm going with UConn over Arizona. I think it's going to be Stanford and UConn in the national championship game. All right? But, yeah, man, that's all I got. Happy Easter to you guys. Celebrate safely. And if you are going to a gathering, at your place of worship, again, do it safely. Mask up. And if you are around family, just be careful, man, be safe, but enjoy it. It's an important time for many, including myself, and, we'll see you guys on Monday. All right. So have a great rest of your Friday afternoon and evening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. Be smart, be safe. And as always, be easy, people.